The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, and I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. On today's episode, Target beats Wall Street's expectations. CEO Brian Cornell joins us for an exclusive interview on his results and his prices.
Inflation has been the stickiest with food and beverage.
How sticky? Cornell explains.
If I go back to pricing pre-pandemic, for many food and beverage items, they're up 20 or 30%.
Inflation nation. Even Cookie Monster is getting involved.
Me hate shrinkflation. Me cookies are getting smaller.
Plus, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg on airline safety and DC politics.
We need to make sure that we highlight the things that are going right and continue to pay attention to the things that are going wrong.
It's Tuesday, March 5th, Super Tuesday.
Tuesday sometimes I like less than Monday.
I always like Tuesday more than Monday.
And Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1, cue it, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box right here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick along with Joe Kernan. Andrew is off today.
Today is... I said it's Tuesday. Sometimes I like less than Mondays. How do you? Is that?
I always like Tuesday more than Monday.
You like it more than Monday?
Yes.
I think
less
Tuesday,
than Thursday, more than Monday.
All right, but it's supposedly super somewhere. Republicans in 15 states are voting for their preferred presidential candidate. Former President Trump's expected to deliver a strong blow to Nikki Haley's campaign hopes, but that will just make her more defiant. She has no events scheduled for today, though, or beyond. And that may be it. Reportedly has no future TV or radio ads booked, according to Ad Impact. The twisting herself into a pretzel to try and stay in the Republican
party. Well, look, she can point out that she has about 30% of the vote, but she doesn't have the delegates.
She might never come back, though. She may never be able to get back in.
I did hear some speculation this morning.
She may be able to go to CNN.
I did hear some speculation this morning that if she were to endorse Trump, that he might actually want that because it could potentially help with suburban voters. But she had 30% of the vote.
So basically, they just need a big never mind, both of them. Trump and her both need a bit.
It
is, I know.
You see how these things play out?
Shouldn't we at some point just roll our eyes and feel like we were... I don't know, sort of used and...
Welcome to politics, yes.
Meantime, Democrats are also holding primaries and caucuses in 15 states, plus American Samoa. By the way, the first polls will close at 7 p.m. Eastern. And I guess if you create a commission, it means that it's really happening. Therefore, it's not your fault. A news alert out of Washington this morning, the Biden administration creating a strike force to root out price gouging. So there really is price gouging going on, Megan Cassell, because we wouldn't have a strike force if there wasn't. What are the details?
That's what the White House says, Joe. That's right. So this is one of several actions coming from Biden's competition counsel today. The strike force is going to be jointly led by the Justice Department and the FTC. They say it's going to be a whole of government effort. It's going to boost collaboration across agencies, share data and resources, and they'll be rooting out deceptive and illegal attempts to keep prices high in areas like food, prescription drugs, transportation. And now, if this sounds familiar, it might be because it's not unlike the executive order on competition that Biden signed in 2021. But the White House says this is really a supercharged whole-of-government approach. There's a couple other highlights from what they're doing today. The CFPB is going to be finalizing its rule to reduce credit card late fees. They say that should take effect about 2 months today, and it'll bring the average credit card late fee down from around $32 to about $8. The FCC is also going to be taking steps to reduce internet costs for some folks living in apartment buildings. And the U.S. Agriculture Department is going to be cracking down on meat and poultry processors to help farmers. So overall, of course, this is good messaging for the White House. They say more competition is good for the economy, but they also say they estimate their junk fee agenda is already saving Americans about $20 billion a year. Joe?
It is good. Competition is good. You're right. They're right about that, Megan. Thank you. Appreciate it. See you later.
In the meantime, Sesame Street jumping in on that inflation conversation. The official Cookie Monster account posted on X, "Me hate shrinkflation. Me cookies are getting smaller." Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown replied, "Me too, Cookie Monster. Big corporations shrink the size of their products without shrinking their prices, all to pay for CEO bonuses."
Got him from Ohio.
Cookie Monster.
I like the Cookie Monster.
Me too.
I just, I don't know. Today I'm not from Ohio. This is going to be a hard election because he's a
Jersey guy.
Yeah, I'm a Jersey guy. He's an Ohio senator, sure. This is going to be hard between now and November, is it not?
Yeah.
Just to walk the line, and it's just really hard because we're in a position where we need to be objective, theoretically. Mm-hmm. Like the rest of our colleagues in cable news on both sides. So no one, everybody's in on the joke, are they not? How are you going to do it? And Andrew will be back on Thursday, too. How are
no, we
going to be okay?
It out. We see what happens.
Trump versus Biden.
I can't believe we're doing this again.
Yeah, but now, too.
Because it wasn't good enough the last time around.
Yeah, we didn't have enough fun. It wasn't as chaotic and nasty and divisive last time.
I love election.
Got to do it again.
Yeah, here we go. Google co-founder Sergey Brin making a rare public appearance over the weekend. He spoke to entrepreneurs at the AGI House in Hillsborough, California, where developers and founders were testing Google's Gemini model. That's the AI model that has sparked so much controversy when it started generating historically inaccurate images, including a female pope and a racially diverse Nazi soldier, or a group of Nazi soldiers. Here's some video of his comments that were released overnight by AGI House.
We definitely messed up on the image generation, I think it was mostly due to just like not thorough testing, it definitely, for good reasons, upset a lot of people.
Brin said that the company isn't quite sure why Gemini's responses have a leftward tilt, but that it isn't their intention. He said that the company has recently made accuracy improvements by as much as 80% on certain international tests. Brin stepped down as president of Alphabet back in 2019. He remains on the board, but he's recently returned to work at the company. It's all around the AI move that Alphabet's been making. Brin actually told those gathered AI enthusiasts that he came out of retirement because the trajectory of AI, he said, is so exciting.
When the story first hit, I kind of thought, you know, we probably need a female pope. That didn't bother me that much. I think a female pope, you know, let's get with the program here. You know, a lot changes in 2,000 years. And then we had Joanne Lippmann on yesterday. Women are smarter. They work harder. They're more virtuous. They're just totally better people than men, as I found out yesterday.
And
they should be, this should be possible for a woman to be a pope. Damn it.
Thank you.
And priests, I mean, everybody else. You know, the Episcopalians, everybody else. What has that got to do with, you know, you can be, I think the Catholic Church and this Pope, our current Pope, I'm not, yeah, right. I like the last one. Well, we had two, I like the, but my favorite, PJ2, JP2. Yeah.
John Paul.
Yeah. I don't know about this guy. That's heresy, isn't it? And I was raised, my uncle was a priest.
You were raised Catholic, went to Catholic high school.
We had mass, Latin mass, the guy was facing the other way, the priest, every morning in first and second grade, every day.
And post-Vatican II, so.
You're post-Vatican II. They changed that. That's right, because it was English after that.
Jeff Bezos has overtaken Elon Musk as the world's richest person. That's according to the Bloomberg Billionaires Index. It estimates Bezos' net worth at $200 billion, which is up by about $23 billion since the beginning of the year, as Amazon shares have risen. That compares to a net worth of $198 billion for Musk. LVMH chief Bernard Arnault was not far behind. He clocks in right now at $197 billion. But again, that's been Apple or Amazon's fortunes rising with Tesla's fortunes coming back down.
Yeah. So you get the island and you get the jet. And then what? Then it's kind of like you're just like the rest of us again, isn't it? Kind of? Or are they really different?
I think they're a little different.
A little different. They have good cooks.
Cheese will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, after a difficult year, Target CEO Brian Cornell sees consumers coming back to the store, and they're ready to spend.
We're not satisfied with where we are, and our theme today is all about a roadmap for growth, getting back to growing the top line, growing traffic, and making sure that we make Target a growth company again.
From pit lane to podium, the Las Vegas Grand Prix is providing fans a race day experience at the speed they deserve. With the help of T-Mobile for Business, our 5G advanced network solutions are powering race day operations with event-wide connectivity. From streamlined gate entry to an immersive app, giving fans blazing fast access to the sport they love. This is accelerating innovation. This is the Las Vegas Grand Prix with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
Good morning and welcome back to Squawk Box here on CNBC, live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Joe Kernan, along with Becky Quick, and Andrew is off this morning.
All right, Target's out with better than expected fourth quarter results this morning. Came in with earnings of $2.98 a share. That was much better than the $2.42 the street was expecting. Revenue also beat expectations, coming in at $31.92 billion versus the $31.8 billion that had been expected. And joining us right now for an exclusive interview is Brian Cornell. He's Target's chairman and CEO. That stock, by the way, up by about 7.6% so far this morning. And Brian, thank you for joining us.
Great to be here.
So a lot of things to move through just on the quarter that you just ended, the year you just ended, before we get to your guidance for the next year. I think the thing that jumped out at me the most was how operating margins improved. That was a big deal. What happened?
Well, I think it was a really solid full year. I mean, you reported it, you and Joe have been talking about it, but to see our op profit grow by almost $2 billion, EPS year on year up almost 50%, really solid progress from an inventory management standpoint. We've been talking about efficiency work within the organization. Of the almost $2 billion in profit improvement, about a half billion came from operational efficiencies that we are continuing to focus in on.
Like what? What did you do differently?
Inventory management played a big part in it. In greater productivity, upstream in supply chain, in stores. So the team's really focused on managing cost. And we did see sequential improvement from the second quarter to the third quarter to the fourth quarter, really led by a big improvement in traffic. But if you decide to join us later today, and we're right down the street having our annual investor conference, you'll hear me talk about the fact that we're not satisfied with where we are. And our theme today is all about a roadmap for growth, getting back to growing the top line, growing traffic, and making sure that we make Target a growth company again.
How do you do that for the year? We did talk a little bit about the full year. You're looking for comps to be flat to up 2%, which is about what the street was expecting. Adjusted earnings per share, $8.60 to $9.60. The street was at $9.15. That's right around the midpoint. But for the first quarter, you are looking for earnings per share to be probably below what the street was expecting. Comps down 3 to 5%, earnings per share $1.70 to $2.10. So what's happening in the current quarter, and how do you expect to change that through the rest of the year?
Becky, we've been working across the organization on some great plans to stimulate traffic, drive comp growth across our business. We certainly expect to see improvement in our overall company performance. And we're putting a lot of time into ensuring we have the right balance of newness and value across our portfolio, whether you're shopping in our stores or online. And I think as we look at the current state of the consumer, we know they're shopping at that intersection between newness and value.
So
And we'll be focused throughout the year.
The consumer is still looking at value propositions. You're looking at a consumer that's a little pinched coming in?
Well, I think as we think about the consumer, and I've heard, Joe, you talk about this, Becky talk about it for now years now. I think we've seen a very resilient U.S. consumer. Despite inflationary headwinds, rising interest rates, the uncertainty of the market overall, the consumer continues to shop. You know, on a full year basis, we generated $107 billion in sales. And a big part of that came from discretionary categories. So it's a consumer who's on a budget, they're shopping carefully, they're still looking for newness, they're still looking for value, they're celebrating seasons. So we expect that to continue in 2024.
Right, Brian, the inventory issues were a couple of years ago. I mean, you've been dealing with them now for a couple of years, but the stock bottom in like October, November, at like 102. I'm wondering what that last move from 150 to 102, that wasn't inventory anymore. That was macro recession worries. Was that what it was, that we were all waiting for Godot last year for a recession?
Well, I think many in retail face some inventory challenges coming out of the pandemic.
No.
And certainly, Joe, there's been some concerns about discretionary spending in categories like apparel and home and toys. And we certainly have seen some of that over 2023. We expect some improvement as we go into 2024. And a big part of that's going to be the work we do with our national brand partners, with our own brands, with our great partnerships to make sure we have the right balance of newness and value in our offering.
When you talk about the efficiencies you get out of that and inventory management, does that mean fewer SKUs, too, that there's fewer things that you're putting into the stores? And does that translate into items that are not in stock or not?
Yeah. Actually, one of the great outcomes, Becky, is we're actually in stock more often. It's greater reliability. When we have the right inventory in our system, it flows from our DCs to our stores more efficiently, from our stores to the shelf, and we focus on retail fundamentals, which start with making sure when you and Joe come in, the product you're looking for is on the shelf at a great value with a great guest experience. Whether you're in a store or you're using our drive-up lane, which grew by double digits again this year, and we're putting it in your trunk and then bringing you now your favorite Starbucks coffee. So reliability is really important. And when we get inventory right, the entire system flows better.
Meaning what, though? I mean, is that just merchandising, like you pick the right stuff, or is it that you really cut back on the number of things that you're putting out there? Because that's a tricky thing to do, yeah. Being a merchandiser.
Yeah, like, and it varies by category.
Yeah.
So category by category, looking at the right blend of how many items do we want in the assortment? What's the blend of national brands versus own brands? How do we bring newness in? And I think in many categories, we've done that really well. One of the standout categories for us when I think about newness and inspiration has been beauty. And that category just continues to grow. Great national brands, great newness in that category, great discovery. And we're going to take some of those lessons and bring it to other parts of our assortment.
It's already been 10 years. You've been there 10 years.
I have been there for 10 years now, Joe. At this desk quite a few times over the years.
Do you think you do things differently now? I mean, are there things you've learned? And I'm not about the inventory thing. Or are you better now? What have you learned over the 10 years that maybe you would have done differently in the past now?
I think our entire team has learned how important it is to listen to the consumer. And I use that term versus the way we talked about it in the past, talking about listening to our guests. And we certainly value the relationship we have with those guests that love shopping with Target. But I think we've learned we've got to listen to the American consumer, be on trend, understand how things are changing. I mean, in the retail business today, social plays a big role in influencing what people buy. If Becky Quick is wearing a white puffer at Davos and happens to tweet that she found it at Target, the next day I know people are going to be rushing into our stores looking for that product. So we've learned we've got to be really good students of the consumer. Constantly follow trends, see what's new and exciting. But I think that's been, for us, foundational.
So should you be a great corporate citizen, or should you walk a middle line and just try to keep your head down and do what you do in terms of retail? You know what I mean? Because every CEO has to think about that now. And there's been a little bit of a sea change, I think, in the last year or so, where I've read, even for the Super Bowl, the ads this year, we want to just make sure that we sell our product, but we don't want to make anyone mad here. We don't want to make anyone mad here. We don't want to get into any of these things that some CEOs were really embracing a couple of years ago.
Yeah. I mean, Joe, we talk a lot about Target being a happy place.
Yeah.
And how we bring joy to those millions and millions of guests who shop us every week.
Yeah.
And that's when we're at our best.
We don't need any drama. I'd rather just be happy.
The right product, you know, great newness, great value, a great guest experience, whether you're in-store or online. When we do that well, we get rewarded. And that's what we wake up every day focusing on. How do we make sure we've got the right
products? Make everyone happy at the same time.
Because we serve all of America.
Right.
You know, we got a stat that we're going to talk about today. I'll try not to steal a lot of the thunder from our presentation, but 96% of America has shopped in Target at some point in their lives.
Yeah.
We appeal to everyone. And we've got to make sure we're the happy place for whether you're here in New York or you're in Los Angeles or in Minneapolis. We want to make sure the brand really connects with all families.
What are you going to lay out to the street today, just in terms of how you continue this? What are your goals for the year?
Yeah, we're actually, Becky, going to go beyond just 1 year. And we're going to actually talk about the next 10 years and the investments we're making in our stores, the number of new stores we're going to open up, the number of stores we'll remodel, the investments we're going to make in supply chain and technology. One of the things that I'm really excited about, and I'm just going to tease it a little bit, is we're going to talk about some enhancements we're making to our Target Circle loyalty program. You've heard me talk about that before. We've got about 100 million members, and you'll see some really big enhancements to that program.
There's a Reuters story out today wondering if you're going to introduce a new paid membership program. I think they call it Project Trident. Yeah. Is that what you're referring to?
I am, and you're going to have to wait a couple of hours for that. I'll save some seats for you and Joe right up front. But one of the things I will tell you is we'll be putting a big emphasis on Target same-day delivery to your home to make sure whether it's food and beverage, household essentials, or anything in our assortment, America knows we can get it to your home within 2 hours.
I'm already a Shipt member, though. I already pay a membership fee for that. Is this going to be something that includes that or something beyond that?
You'll have to wait, but it'll be something beyond that. I think it's going to be a really important part of what drives growth for us as we go into next year. And we're really excited about talking about it later today.
You've seen Macy's and what's happening.
I sure have.
Do we not need Macy's in America right now? We just need Target?
Well, Joe, when I look at that, I see market share opportunities. I mean, we're a big player.
You're going to make it worse for them. They're already closing all their stores. Stop,
Brian. You know, we've got to say, all right, how do we make sure
we're there? So you look at it as an opportunity.
Absolutely. I mean, we've got almost 2,000 stores across the country. When we see that happen, we've got to say, all right, how do we lean in? How do we make sure we introduce the Target brand, our great apparel offering, to those consumers? And one of the things I'm excited about is the work our apparel team's done. If you were walking our stores right now, and you walk right into a Target store, what you see from our spring apparel collection, I think is something you and your daughters would enjoy. So we've done some great work there. On trend, great color, great value. That's what's going to get us back on track with growth next year.
It reminds me of the opportunity when Toys R Us closed down. Yeah. You did step into toys in a much bigger way.
We're one of the biggest toy retailers in America. About one out of every four toys is sold at Target. So when we see changes like that, Joe, we've got to lean in. We've got to play to win.
Think about it.
I mean, our message today is we're going to get back on offense.
Kmart, Sears, JCPenney, Macy's. I mean, it's amazing how it's changed. For every crisis, it can be an opportunity for Target.
And as others have closed, back to the last 10 years, we've opened up 200 new stores across the country.
Right.
We've remodeled over 1,200 stores. So we're putting capital to work, and that drives more traffic. It makes our brand more prominent. We'll continue to invest in new stores for the next decade, and that's going to be a big part of our long-term growth.
Brian, the plans you're talking about today, the investments over the next 10 years that cost money, is it going to differ from any of the things that your shareholders might be looking for? Because I did realize you didn't buy back any shares in the fourth quarter. Will you pick back up with the share buybacks this year?
One of the highlights, if you kind of drill down on our results, is the improvement in our cash position year on year. We improved our cash by almost $4 billion, from $4 billion to $8 billion. So we've got cash to invest. Our priorities have not changed. We'll invest certainly in our business first. We think it's the best way to drive returns. We have a long history of paying a dividend, and that dividend over the last 10 years has doubled. And potentially later this year, we'll start buying back shares.
Okay, but that's the order.
That would be the order. Hasn't changed.
We have heard this morning from the Biden administration that they're going to be looking into price gouging at every level, I think from beef through housing, all kinds of things, transportation that they're looking at. Where do you see the inflation battle right now? Where are prices and what are you able to deliver to consumers?
I think inflation has been the stickiest with food and beverage. If I go back to pricing pre-pandemic, for many food and beverage items, certainly those center of store grocery items, they're up 20 or 30%.
For your costs.
For our costs and for the consumer. And when I think about, you know, the challenge the American family is facing right now, yes, interest rates are up, you know, gas prices have been volatile, but if you're feeding your family and those prices for core food staples are up 20 to 30%, that's putting a strain on your wallet. And I think that's been something American families have been dealing with for years now and continue to deal with as we go into 2024.
Brian, I want to thank you for coming in and sitting down with us before Wall Street.
Front row.
I'll have seats for you.
Front
We'd
row.
We'd love to have you there.
Refreshments?
I'll make sure there's refreshments and snacks.
All right. That's a deal. Brian, I want
to
thank you very much for coming in.
Up next on Squawk Pod, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg holding Boeing accountable to manufacturing and safety standards, managing the politics of D.C., and securing the U.S. border.
I really believe we've gotten to the point where many congressional Republicans find it so useful as a cudgel that they would rather keep the problem going for political uses than solve the problem and risk the chance that the president could share in the credit for that.
A spirited discussion awaits you when we come back.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
This is Squawk Pod from CNBC, today with Joe Kernan and Becky Quick.
Stand by, Joe. Here's Mike. Cue.
President Biden set to deliver a State of the Union speech on Thursday evening. Ahead of the event, his administration is highlighting what it sees as its biggest accomplishments. Some of these, those are projects funded by the infrastructure law from 2021. Join us now to talk about that and some other key issues. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, it's good to see you, Mr. Secretary. Can we start with FAA type stuff, and then we'll get to this this politics stuff a little bit later. Tomorrow's Thursday is a big night. We understand that. We'll get to that as quickly as possible. But number one, I guess JetBlue. You agree with that? It's good for consumers that's not going to happen with Spirit.
Yeah, we weighed in as a department to back up the Department of Justice, largely because of concerns about what has happened over the years in the airline industry. You know, back at the time of deregulation, it was confidently predicted that there would be about 100 major competitive airlines in the United States by the turn of the century. Obviously, things worked out differently. We have had fewer and fewer airlines, more and more concentration, more and more consolidation, and that has an effect on consumers. And so just like across the administration, we're taking a tougher line on antitrust, really concerned about what's happening to consumers in any sector, including travel and tourism. This is one where we had a lot of concerns, stood with the DOJ, and I think right now having more airlines rather than less airlines, more competition rather than less competition, is good for passengers.
The latest on that other issue we talked about, and it's not Spirit Airlines, Spirit Aerosystems, so it gets a little bit confusing, but there's some talk maybe Boeing just finally buy Spirit back in. But at this point, the FAA, I think, has been visiting both companies, and it's going to continue on-site presence at both Boeing and Spirit. What needs to happen? Do they report back to you on what they're finding? How do you fix quality issues that seem like they might be more than just a one-off?
Yeah, there was an intense round of visits. We had FAA boots on the ground a few days ago. The administrator met with the senior leadership of Boeing, communicated some real concerns about what seems to be their inability to comply with the kind of quality control practices that FAA expects of them, and gave them 90 days to present a comprehensive plan and show how they're going to move forward to cure these issues. Look, this is something that is obviously of critical importance, and we're going to come at all of this from the perspective of safety. It is no accident, no pun intended, it's no accident that we have gone 15 years without a fatal crash of an airliner. That's the result of an extremely rigorous standard when it comes to not just the way these planes are designed, not just the way they're flown, but also the way that they're manufactured. Anytime something's out of compliance, that puts that record at risk. We never take for granted there's this incredible fact that flying through the air is actually the safest way to travel in the United States of America. Keeping it that way is going to require Boeing to step up and FAA to keep Boeing under a microscope, including this, you know, tough step that was unprecedented of limiting how many aircraft they can produce in a month until they can demonstrate that if they want to do a higher number, they can do it safely.
Boeing got a big order yesterday from American, and you know, maybe they can get through all this, but it's been a tough couple of years. Stock is down about 50% or so. It's an important company, maybe one of our greatest manufacturing companies in this country, I think, Mr. Secretary. What do they need to do? Do you think that it makes sense if they were to buy Spirit AeroSystems back? Is that a better way to handle these issues?
You know, I haven't weighed in on their business structure. I think for them, that's a business decision. For us, any interest we have in that has to do with safety. You're right, the economic importance of this company is enormous. Not long ago, I was in the Pacific Northwest. I was in Vancouver, Washington, meeting with high schoolers who were in a tech program to get them ready for the trades. And one of the students, we were asking them, you know, what they were up to. One of the students' eyes lit up when he let us know that he was about to have his second round of competing for an internship to go work at Boeing. We know how important that is for the economy, but really on our side of the house, and certainly FAA's side of the house, it's 100% a conversation about safety. And of course, doing the right thing on safety, having the right safety culture, is one of the things that's going to be necessary for the long-term health of Boeing as a business, too.
We'll switch gears now. On Thursday, we will hear the State of the Union from the president. And there have been some expectations built up, I think, among Democrats and President Biden supporters that it's an important State of the Union. But we're in very obviously divisive times, very strange times. If you look at the GDP, I know you could bring that up, how well we've seen growth hold up when we thought a recession was coming. We've seen unemployment well below historic levels, at historic lows. And frequently it's been pointed out the disconnect between how the economy is doing, new highs in the stock market, and the perception of the job President Biden has done on the economy. And I know you had to have seen these polls this week. They were kind of staggering, kind of shocking from the likes of the New York Times or CBS or Ipsos in terms of that, not only not giving the president credit, but really nasty. 18% say the president's policies have benefited them economically. Even among women, 20% more say Trump's policies benefited them than Biden's. What do you attribute that to, and how do you fix that?
Well, you're right. When you look at the numbers across our economy, all-time highs in the stock market, record job creation, unemployment that hasn't been this low for this long since before I was born, you see so many good things happening that we want to tell the story for. And I'm one of those who definitely believes the president deserves more credit for those achievements. Part of how you do that is you got to go out there and take credit for those achievements. And I think you'll see the president in the State of the Union talking about what's been achieved. You're definitely going to see cabinet members like me continuing to go out across the country, pointing to the projects that are getting done, the Blatnik Bridge being redone in Minnesota, Wisconsin is just one example out of 40,000 that we're highlighting right now. But look, people are also frustrated, and I get it. People are generally frustrated with the negativity they see every time they see coverage of Washington. That's why Congress right now has an approval rating, last time I checked, was I think in the 20s. So we need to make sure that we highlight the things that are going right and continue to pay attention to the things that are going wrong and lay out the plan and make clear who's trying to get progress and who's trying to actually solve those problems versus just use them to score political points. I mean, it was especially disappointing to see what happened with the border, right? You got congressional GOP talked about the border every chance they got. So you would think they would be interested in addressing it. And yet when a bipartisan bill put together by one of the most conservative members of the Senate and Democrats working, negotiating, making tough, tough decisions that both of their respective bases were going to have trouble with, came and hammered that out. It looked like there was going to be a chance to do something real with real resources at the border, only for Donald Trump, who's not even an elected official, to come in and kill it with the chill that he put on congressional Republicans.
But
so, yeah,
we
can either solve problems or we can have them be political football.
So the whole move to try to come up with something by the administration and obviously bipartisan, that didn't come until it became clear it was going to be a major campaign issue. And only then did the Biden administration get interested in it. And every time I hear But every time we hear those talking points that suddenly it was Republicans who ruined the border, that's why people get so frustrated. We know what President Biden said about inviting people in. We know that he got rid of all the things that were keeping the border closed that President Trump had put in. We know that he got rid of all those. So when you say it's not his fault,
he got rid of the family separation.
Did you see 7.2 million people come in during the Trump administration? It was a trickle.
He got rid of the policy to tear children out of the arms of their parents. That's true. But it is not true. Some of the other things that have been suggested. Let's be clear. Bipartisan efforts of border reform
have
taken place in 2015, 2006. I mean, literally since the Reagan administration, right? There have been bipartisan efforts to get something done here. But I really believe we've gotten to the point where many congressional Republicans find it so useful as a cudgel that they would rather keep the problem going for political uses than solve the problem and risk the chance that the president could share in the credit for that. In the same way that you know, we see some of them, even though we had great bipartisan cooperation on the infrastructure bill that I work on, a lot of them who were against that, only to turn around and try to get credit for it when we actually have a ribbon cutting or a groundbreaking.
The reason that some of these numbers stay where they are is because it just seems like instead of actually owning some of the issues that we have, instead of acknowledging that the president maybe has lost a step, the administration keeps saying, "Don't believe your lying eyes," and that's why you're at 18%.
Respectfully, I think congressional Republicans are saying, "Don't believe your lying eyes," which is why they're polling at about 15% right now.
I know
Is it my lying eyes that under Joe Biden we've had the most job creation in American history? Is it my lying eyes telling us that unemployment and inflation are both below 4%? And have been that way for the longest time in who knows when? Is it reality or is it spin to point out the fact that manufacturing jobs are up under this president and we're down under the last president?
These are matters of simple fact. When we heard for 3 years that the border's closed and it's secure, and Mayorkas said it's closed, and 7.2 million people have come into where our big cities have no idea how to handle this.
This is really important, okay? The common sense position, and the position that, by the way, a lot of moderate Democrats and moderate Republicans would always say, the kinds of things that you hear at the Chamber of Commerce in Indiana, where I come from, is that there ought to be more legal immigration and less illegal immigration. And yet when there's a chance to actually do that, that's not what happened. The last administration cut legal immigration. And meanwhile, our economy is pulling people just as much as terrible conditions in Latin America are pushing people. And when there's finally a bipartisan compromise that would help address at least some of those issues, congressional Republicans couldn't get it done because Donald Trump, who's not even in elected office, killed it. That is a fact.
We'll see whether this moves the needle. I just think, you know, the American public just wants something that benefits them. They just don't want to hear.
So do we.
What they see so isn't we, happening, Mr. Secretary. But we appreciate your time, and we'll be watching on Thursday night. Thank you.
That does it for the podcast today. Thank you for listening, as always. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin, weekday mornings on CNBC, starting at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, follow Squawk Pod wherever you're listening now. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
We are clear. Thanks, guys.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.